Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Wraith, Danger Close, by Jeffrey H. Haskell, narrated by Lacey Laurel. What has come before? As told by Kursan Swahili, famous writer, Pulitzer Award-winning reporter, an all-around perfect woman. Okay, maybe that last bit is a stretch. However, Maddie told me I could tell her story one day, and that day is here. Through this blog, I will catch people up on what is happening with the Wraith, from her painful beginnings to the bitter end. After all, there's only one way the story ends for Madison Dumas, but let's not dwell on that. Madison is a former fashion model who lost her job at the tender age of 27. She returned home to New Orleans, a city she hated to visit because it was where her twin brother died. She had been home less than a day when her ex-husband and a superpowered gang murdered her entire family and left her for dead. After 6 months in a coma, she awoke to find her whole family had been killed in a Thanksgiving Day fire. According to the authorities, it was a tragedy but not murder. Maddie knew that they would come for her next, so she ran. She fled to the only other place she really knew, New York City, only to have assassins dog her trail. She finally met an FBI agent who believed her, only to have him murdered in front of her. It was then that Maddie realized there would be no justice, not even for her little sister, whom she loved more than anything else, and who died in her arms. So she did the only thing she could think of to do. She ran, heading west for a place she had never been before, hoping to lose herself in the wide-open spaces of the West and try to live some semblance of a life. Then she read an article I had written about Detroit's very own costumed vigilante, the Wraith. She went there hoping to find him and have him take down ISO-1, but he couldn't be that guy anymore. He was done killing. Instead, he ended up training her. The Army's basic training that turns boys into soldiers over 3 months has nothing on what she went through. Brutal, grueling, intense training that he made as hard as possible. He held nothing back, and she passed every test. About the time her training was complete, ISO-1 decided I was writing too many exposés and they came for me. Lucky for me, I had a guardian angel. During the fight, the man who had killed Maddie's sister showed up. He and Maddie fought, and even though he had superpowers, she managed to kill him. It was pretty amazing. However, it cost her everything. What I didn't know at the time was that Joseph, the original Wraith, had an entity in him, something that fed off killing. It transferred from him into Maddie and saved her life. She became the new Wraith. And oh my freaking God, was she good at it. In 2 nights, she wiped out the biggest drug-running human trafficking gang in Detroit. I'm telling you, she is an artist and her art is death. Once she was ready, she returned home to New Orleans to carry out her long-awaited justice. It wasn't easy. ISO-1 had a big plan to kill the Saints, the New Orleans super team. They had an angelic hero on the team whose superpower prevented any kind of mind control and would reveal corruption. Since ISO-1's MO was to blackmail, bribe, and threaten everything, they couldn't let that stand. Too bad for them. Maddie was in town and killed every one of them. In the end, she gave her ex-husband a choice: side with her or betray her. He betrayed her and in doing so caused his own death. Before she left town, she killed the flaming woman El Fuego, who had burned Maddie's mom alive and their house to the ground. I don't always agree with my friend's methods, but it isn't my job to judge her. I'm a reporter. But killing a woman in front of her parents? That was brutal. Justice without the temper of mercy. That's Maddie to a T. No mercy. After that, we headed for the fabulous crime-infested country and city of Belize. Maddie got ISO's attention by killing a nightclub full of low-level thugs. Then, during her time in the city, She learned that ISO-1 had put a bounty out on her and had also used its contacts in the U.S. government to move her to the top of the FBI's most wanted list. She found out from a black market contact about an island where they shipped girls. She went there and killed all of them and sent the girls toward the U.S. on a stolen cargo ship. From there, she found out about a hospital where they were shipping about one-third of the abducted girls. It turns out, they were experimenting on them with some ugly genetic mix of alien and human DNA. They made creatures that were straight out of nightmares. Maddie fought and killed them all, and in the end, blew the facility to smithereens. On a side note, I learned that my superpower could also be used to read computers, not just phones. Very cool. Maddie returned to Belize with an old friend she met in the hospital, but she knew it wasn't her friend but a shapeshifter. The shifter led her into a trap, which was exactly what Maddie wanted. She killed the public head of ISL-1, then made the shifter turn herself in as Maddie to the police so we can continue our crusade unmolested. Unfortunately, Maddie found out that the man she killed wasn't the real head of the organization. The real leader went by the name Mr. Axiom and was an alien. Yeah, that's what she said. We needed to help bring him down, and the only person I knew who had any experience or vested interest in bringing down aliens was Amelia Lockhart, the Full Metal superhero. Time to fangirl. Chapter 1. One thing I didn't lack was commitment. I had proven that time and time again with the Wraith. I understood a little better how the Wraith felt about it, since I was now the one relying on someone who I felt lacked the same level of dedication. When the Wraith first inhabited me, we fought over whether I was going to go through with my plans or lose my stomach for the killing. I'd be lying if I said all the killing was easy. It helped that the people I ended were all bad. Still, even a killer needs a break now and again. But not this day. I was crouched on the rooftop corner of a 6-story apartment building on the outskirts of downtown Phoenix, Arizona. Even at night, the heat was miserable. I had traded my usual leather pants and jacket for light cargo pants and a t-shirt, and I couldn't even think of putting on my red scarf. Not in this heat. Next to me was a duffel bag with a scoped MK-12 rifle. It was chambered in a 5.56 and had a 30-round magazine. My target was the nightclub next door. Through Quasan, I knew it was the front for a lesser cartel that was using the activities of the place to launder its dirty money from drug running and human trafficking. The poorest southern border invited this kind of criminal activity. With ISO-1 practically gone since I killed their boss in Belize, there were plenty of cartels and syndicates ready to take up the mantle. Corson interrupted my dark thoughts with her cheery voice. How cool is this, huh? Waiting for a superhero raid? Do you think they'll do it? I shrugged. Lockhart seemed willing to go through with it to flush out our query. That's all I care about, I said to my companion on the other end of the cell phone. Lockhart had offered us communications devices, but I didn't trust her. If superheroes were really in it for the people, they would handle this crap, and what happened to my family wouldn't have happened. You know, you can call her Arsenal or Amelia. You don't have to keep using her last name as a pejorative, Crisson said. Was she offended I wasn't all gaga over the armored hero? Sure, she saved the planet a couple of times. That really was beyond anything I could imagine. I was less concerned with saving the world than curbing the infestation of evil that seemed to inhabit every corner of it. She's not our friend, Corson, not even our ally. She's a convenient resource that will likely abandon us the second she decides she doesn't like our methods. Corson didn't respond to that, but that was okay. I didn't need her to. Since I took on the mantle of the Wraith, things had escalated again and again. Every time I thought I was close to wiping out ISO-1, another layer was revealed. Last time was when the man I thought was the head of ISO-1 really wasn't. Some crazy-ass alien was actually the leader. An alien. How the hell am I supposed to fight an alien? Alvarez nearly killed me with his plasma gun, and if the alien had more of those? Which brought me to where I was. working with a super who used a suit of high-tech armor to fight crime and bad guys. This is such a friggin' mistake. Tsk, tsk, Maddie. Give it time. I think working with the Full Metal superhero will do us good, Spy said from behind me. I leaned out over the side of the building, resting on my knee, while waiting for any sign of our target. Since when are you the play nice with others type, Spice? I asked while peeking over my shoulder at the innocent-looking teen. Wraith always liked to change up Spice's appearance. Sometimes she wore shorts and a t-shirt for playing ball. Other times, her Sunday best. This time she wore her school uniform straight out of an anime with her plaid skirt and white shirt. She swears she can't read my mind, but sometimes I think she uses the image of my little sister to piss me off, and other times to manipulate me. I'd tell her to change clothes, but it would just play into her hand. She took the sucker out of her mouth with a loud popping sound and smiled at me. Since you decided to get sensible and team up with someone who killed 40 billion sentient beings. I shook my head, like an alcoholic looking for her next drink. Of course that's what she's thinking about. A high-pitched whine drifted through the air from the south, soft at first, but growing louder by the second. I think that's our girl, Croissant said over the phone. A few seconds later, I saw her, flying through the air at a decent clip, the moonlight reflecting off her brushed steel suit. I didn't actually think it was made of steel, but it was what it looked like. She circled the area once before coming down to hover above me, then dropping to the rooftop. The suit hit the gravel with a crunch. She barely flexed her knees when she hit. I knew the suit gave her super strength. I had watched all the footage of her I could get my hands on. Still, it seemed incredible for her to have it. I turned from the nightclub and was walking toward her when I heard a pop behind me. Instincts honed by training and use kicked in. I had my Colt 1911 out and pointed in the face of the woman who had appeared behind me. She was absolutely the most beautiful woman I had ever seen in my life. If I was still a model, I'd tell her to get in that line of work. She wore a form-fitting black outfit with pockets and bandoliers. Multiple holsters on her hips contained pistols of some kinds, and with my cursory glance, I spotted a few grenades. My examination of her was interrupted by the tip of an 18-inch sword pressed against my stomach. Arsenal's helmet receded into her suit, revealing her face to the world. Madison, this is Kate, otherwise known as... Oh my God, it's Domino! Croissant squealed in my ear, blocking out whatever Arsenal was about to tell me. Wraith, I presume, the woman said to me. She hadn't lowered her sword yet. I narrowed my eyes at her. I didn't like her. Domino, I said. We stood there, weapons pointed at each other for a long few seconds. We're on the same side here, Arsenal said from behind me. She put a hand on my shoulder to let me know it was okay. I wasn't sure it was. I pointed the pistol up before sliding it into the holster at my hip. The sword vanished into her arm. One second it was there, the next it retreated, not unlike Arsenal's helmet. I glanced at the two of them, my mind going through the possibilities of such tech. Are you in a suit of armor, too? I asked the woman with the dazzling green eyes. She cocked an exquisitely manicured eyebrow at me. You don't watch the news, do you? I shook my head. I hear enough lies from the people I'm after. I don't need to hear them on TV, too, I said. She smiled at me, and I found myself smiling back. Maybe I would like her after all. I don't trust her, Spy said from behind me. I glanced back at her. She wore a scowl. She's too perfect. No one should be that perfect. Spice wasn't wrong. Domino was a vision of human perfection. Was it her powers that did that, or something else? And the way she smelled, it was just nice being around her, and I found myself relaxing. What's the plan, Amelia? Kate asked as she walked by me to stand next to her friend. Madison, the armored superhero asked me. I pointed at the building across the street. Inside is a man named Carmine Torino. He's a low-level thug for the Akosar cartel. He's of no importance other than his brother-in-law is the head of the group. If Carmine goes down, they'll send someone to investigate. Then I can start climbing up the chain until we get to Akosar. Kate looked at Amelia, then me. You're going to kill him? I pulled the bag off the sniper rifle. Yes. No, Amelia said. We do this our way. If he's in jail, you'll get the same results, she said with a shake of her head. He has superpowers, and he's sitting in that club scoping out girls to send south of the border for a life of slavery. He deserves to die, I said to them. That's not how we operate, Amelia said to me. If you don't want him in jail, we'll go in and flush him out. From there, we can follow him, tap his phones, find out what he knows. After that, we can make a plan going forward. I shook my head. He needs to die. Once he's gone, it will take them time to find someone else with his powers to take over. During that window, I can dismantle their entire human trafficking organization here in Arizona. Kate took a step toward me, putting a hand on my arm and smiling. Let's try it our way first. Worst case, you can always kill him tomorrow, she said with words like honey. I felt like there was a bee buzzing around my thoughts, and I found myself agreeing with her. Sure, there's always tomorrow, I said, but did I believe that? Amelia nodded. Okay, here we go. Her armor closed up and her boots emitted a whine as she shot up into the air. What kind of powers does he have? Kate asked. He's an empath. Specifically, he can touch women and get them to do and believe whatever he wants them to. It lasts about 24 hours. Why in the hell a power like that exists is beyond me, I said. She nodded, a dark cloud covering her face, and I instantly felt bad for her. Why the hell do you care at all that she's sad? I shook my head, trying to get rid of the annoying buzz that just got louder and more insistent. Maddie, you okay? Corsan asked. Yeah, why? I replied in a whisper. You don't sound like you is all. Arsenal landed on the street in front of the club. There was a long line of people waiting to get inside, and they all started screaming as their local superhero showed up. I thought you people couldn't interfere in regular crimes, I asked Kate while I thought about what Corsan said. We can't, but if there are superpowers involved, we're allowed to investigate. If a crime is in progress, we can call the police and ask for permission to intervene, she said. Permission? I said with disgust. Everything that's wrong with the situation. Well, here in Arizona, the protectors pretty much have carte blanche to act. Outside of Arizona, that changes, she said. Where are you from? New Orleans, I said without missing a beat. Why did I tell her that? Down on the street, Arsenal was admitted into the club. I could see from here that the two big men at the door wore huge smiles. It must be a big deal for them to have her in the place. Depending on how smart Carmine was, he'd either run immediately or stay and... The side door in the alley to the right bust open, and a man in his 30s, wearing mobster clothes so cliche it made my eyeballs hurt, ran down the street. And that would be him, I said. But Kate was gone, vanished. Teleporter. Well, two can play at that game. I drew my pistol and stepped forward. A wave of cold washed over me, and when I thought I could take no more, I stepped out into the shadows in front of Carmine and clotheslined him. The knife edge of my hand hit him in the throat, knocking him back to land in a thump on the pavement. He screamed as he hit, his hands flying up, trying to pull a gun from underneath his 70s-style sport coat. I shot him in the shoulder. He screamed some more, dropping his gun as he was no longer able to hold it. I kicked it aside and pointed the big 45 at his face. "Say goodbye, Carmine," I said with a sneer. Kate lifted my gun straight up, wedging her thumb between the hammer and the slide. "That's not what we talked about," she said a few inches from my face. Anger flashed through me, raw and unfiltered. How dare she stop me? No, she was right. I'd agreed to not kill him, hadn't I? Why in the world would I agree to not kill him? Son of a... I took a step back, triggering my teleport as fast as I could. I was a block away. I turned and looked up at the roof where I had waited, then appeared there. Stepping out of the shadows, I grabbed my rifle and headed for the door. Corsan, she's an empath, right? I asked. Yes. Can she control people? There was a pause for a moment as my friend looked into it. I heard a pop behind me. I turned and hit the door with my back, kicking it open as I stepped through. Stay away from me, I growled at her. It's not like that, Madison. We just don't want you killing anyone, she said, holding her hands up in front of her. What I do is up to me and no one else. If you ever come near me again, I'll kill you, I said as I spun through the door, then triggered my teleport, leaping through the shadows to the bottom floor. Once there, I was out on the street and in my rented Mustang, tossing the rifle in the back and hitting the ignition. I'm sorry, Maddie. Yeah, she has limited ability to influence people. I didn't think she would use it on you, though, Croissant said. That's what I get for trusting superheroes. I took the corner, squealing the tires as I headed around the block. The Mustang wasn't great with sharp turns, but I had the reflexes and skill to nurse it around the corners until I was back on the street where Carmine was on the ground. The cops were there, two cars, four officers, and an ambulance. I slammed on the brakes, screeching the car to a halt while rolling down the passenger window. The officer sensed something was wrong and started moving to intervene. They were too slow. I had my pistol out and fired three rounds in a split second. Each one hit Carmine in the head, reducing it to a squishy mess cracked open on the pavement. No less than he deserved. I hit the gas, burning the tires as the cops fired into the rear of the vehicle. A bullet bounced through the trunk and hit me in the ribs, eliciting a grunt of pain. Finally! It's been days since you killed someone, Spice said from the passenger seat. There was no rush, no trigger of endorphins, which meant I was in a deficit. And which meant I had to listen to Spice whine about me not killing enough people. Damn it. This was not how I wanted this operation to go. Sorry, Amelia, Kate said to her friend. I pushed her a little hard, but damn if she didn't have a strong resistance. The woman known as a Full Metal Superhero stood next to the body that was once a human being. What the Wraith had done to him was bile-inducing, and Amelia was thankful the police had put a tarp over his remains. Epic tried to warn me that she was dangerous. I thought by bringing you in, we could curb her psychopathic tendencies, Amelia said with a sigh. Kate shook her head. She's not a psycho. I can smell crazy, and she's not crazy. Amelia pointed at the body. How can you look at this and say it isn't crazy? Kate shrugged. There's a war in that girl's mind, between evil and justice. I could feel it, but not quite put my finger on it. Something inside of her is driving this behavior. Maybe it's the loss of her family, or maybe it's something else, but she's not crazy. Dark, for sure. Not crazy. Amelia nodded. She said she was possessed by a ghost who fed off of killing. And you believe her? Kate asked, not incredulously, as they had both seen things far more bizarre than a mere ghost. I saw it for a moment. It looked like a teenage girl. She seemed excited about the death of so many Thun, Amelia said, the last part in a whisper. Wiping out an entire species still didn't sit well with her. And she says there's one on Earth. That it's behind the global crime organization ISO-1. Amelia nodded. I have to find it and stop it, Kate. I have to. Whatever it's planning, it's going to be because of me. Kate sighed. Sorry, Amelia. Because now you're going to have to earn her trust, and I don't think that is going to be easy. Or clean, she said. I know. I left the Ford parked in the worst part of town, with the keys and the ignition. I seriously doubted it would be there long or have any evidence left in it. I hoisted the duffel over my shoulder as I walked toward my backup vehicle. Somehow, Croissant had an endless supply of brand new cars for me to use. This one was a black Camaro with red trim. I tossed the bag into the tiny trunk and got behind the wheel. "What's next?" Croissant asked from the back seat. I shut the door and turned to face her. "We wait. They should send one of their investigators in a few days. Once he's here, we can shake them down for the contact information we need, then jump to the head of the line." "And then?" "The intelligence you gathered says Axiom has links to the Azucar cartel. Azucar points us to Axiom. Once we know where he is..." "That brings us back to the same problem," the brown-haired ex-reporter said. "I know, I know," I said as I turned around and started the car with a roar. "We need Lockhart." I hit the gas, peeling the tires, as I maneuvered the car onto the surface streets. This wasn't how I wanted the day to go. Chapter 2. The single bedroom with attached living room Croissant found for me was exactly where and what I needed. The tiny living quarters were in the middle of an 8-million-square-foot historic neighborhood called the Willow Historic District. It was more than perfect. Anyone who didn't belong would stick out like a sore thumb, making them easy to spot if they were following me. The houses here were the white picket variety, and while the streets were straight and in a grid pattern, there were a million little paths in between them. On the eastern border was a host of warehouse stores with gigantic parking lots, which meant plenty of emergency vehicles if I needed one. Hopefully everyone had insurance, but there are worse things than having your car stolen. Much worse. The living room was tiny, just a small TV and a love seat. On the north side of the house was the bedroom. No door, just an archway decorated with painted flowers. There were three doors leading out, one from the living room to the street, one to the pool, and one to the rest of the house where the host lived. The only downside to this arrangement. But I really needed to be downtown. Phoenix isn't Belize or New Orleans. I wouldn't be able to lose myself in the wilderness or in another city. 10 minutes in any direction, and there's nothing but desert. Hot, empty, and deadly. I tossed my jacket and hip holster containing my 1911 on the green leather love seat. I carried 5 extra mags in my pockets, and those went on the top of the pile. I checked my phone and plugged it into the wall to make sure it stayed charged. Croissant had provided me with a brand new one after our failed venture with the superheroes. She always kept her phones the same model so I wouldn't have to spend hours figuring the damn things out. Lucky for me, she could go into the phones and override all the GPS and tracking features. 2 more trips, and I had all my bags in the house. I was going to be here for at least a week, long enough to need an escape route and some extra assurances. I started by opening all the cabinets in the tiny laundry room. I picked the highest one and placed a Kukri K-bar in it. The dryer was next. I took the filter out and pushed a Ruger LC-38 into the vacated space and tossed the filter into the trash. It wasn't like I was going to do laundry. From there, I went into the bedroom. A DP-12 shotgun with a 14-round magazine went in the corner, behind the 6-foot-tall potted rubber plant. I tossed a square mag in the pot itself. That left just the living room and the tiny dining area. I pulled out the couch cushions and sliced through the bottom using a carom bit, a small knife curved like a claw that was popular in India. Once the couch was open, I stuffed my holographic sight shortened barrel 40-round mag short stock M4 in it, along with 4 extra mags. The M4 was loaded with the green-tipped armor-piercing rounds. They wouldn't do the most damage to people, but were excellent for vehicles and armored targets. By then, the heat was getting to me. I stripped off the button-down shirt I wore and pulled out the 9mm Glock stuffed into the small of my back, then wrapped the shirt around that and put it on the counter. I went into the kitchen, just wearing my sweat-soaked tank top over my low-rise jeans and biker boots. "Oh, hi!" A woman in her mid-30s with bleach blonde hair and hazel eyes waved at me from the sink. "The downside." "Gina, right?" I asked, pasting a smile on my face as I crossed the few feet to her with my hand out. "We only spoke online, but you must be Madison?" she asked. I smiled, putting on the charm. "Got it in one." I shook her hand. She seemed nervous. If I had to guess, it was because I was black, but most people got over that within a few minutes of speaking to me. "I love the place. I said to her as I grabbed a cup and filled it up at the sink. I was thirsty, so I downed the cup and refilled it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?